The legend, Walter Jacobson, is here. Do you get tired of being called legend? Does that ever get old?
No, of course not. I love it.
You know, you and I have talked in the hallways around here about the lunacy of this campaign. Let's go backwards first for a second. When you think about covering every story you've done, obviously, and not all of it's been politics, not even close, but the politics of this town are as interesting as anything in the country. But have you ever seen anything as goofy as this?
You know, you're so right about that, Steve. I mean, it's the biggest, next to sports.
Right.
Next to the Cubs and Bears. Politics is the biggest game in town. And everybody's involved in it. Everybody likes to talk about it. I'm disappointed, have been over years, that the managers of the newspapers and television stations haven't been, because so many of them are from out of town when they get that high up on the ladder. They don't appreciate it. They don't understand enough of what the neighborhoods want out of politics and what people are thinking about it. You know, I had a news director once, and as you say, you know, I've been in this for like 50 years now, and I had a news director once who used to say when I was complaining about not enough focus on this game of politics, used to say, listen, if you really want to know about politics and you want to know about state government or city hall, go to WTTW or go to NPR. That's not what people want. And you know, Steve, you would know as well as anybody, better than anybody. Maybe that's right. Maybe that's right.
Well, here's my concern, and we jump ahead maybe briefly for that. The blogs and the podcasts, not like this one, but the ones now where people think they have a journalism degree and they think their pontifications on it should land and matter with people, are actually dangerous.
Because
you know, you don't want the battle hymn of the Republic playing behind you all the time and sound like the guy waiting for more lemonade on the porch. But there's a reason the founding fathers put the protection of journalists in the Constitution, because somebody has to watch the politicians, and they've been watched less and less and less.
Right. But who's watching these bloggers?
Nobody.
In fact, who's watching the journalists? I think the bloggers don't even consider themselves journalists. They've just got something to say. And, you know, many of them are really quite articulate.
Sure.
And they have interesting points of view. But they haven't gone through the rigors of learning how to distinguish between what's accurate and what's inaccurate and where the source comes from and what he's saying. That's a real danger because, you know, more people listen or read what they're saying than what we're saying.
Could you imagine? That's exactly right. Could you imagine, though, ever going with a big story without sources, without big sources, you know, or falling back on an unnamed person says?
I wouldn't use unnamed person. But I might start an investigation on an anonymous source, but I certainly couldn't get or wouldn't get on the air with it. You never know what you can do these days, but I wouldn't try to go on the air with something that I didn't have completely sourced. I've made mistakes. You know.
Well, we all do. Right. We all do. But the other thing that I think is dangerous about the era we live in now related to journalism is there's a lack of fear from the politicians of those who cover them. And I mean appropriate fear. People were concerned that you, Curtis, that whoever would break a story on them if they were up to something. I think now, and this is why we're locked in this nonsense in Washington and Congress, why should Congress do anything? They don't believe that they're going to be covered to a point to fire up the electorate to change anything.
So then the question becomes, why do they think that? Why do they think they can get away with it? Do they think we're under control of some force out there that's keeping us away from them, protecting them? No, I think they don't care quite as much, because it doesn't in the long run really kill them unless it's a major, major scandal. And B, they don't think people will read it.
Right.
And all they care about basically is getting themselves reelected. And as long as they haven't put their foot in a real bad mud puddle, they're going to be okay. And you know what? They don't know what we can and should do. I remember talking to people like Vito Marzullo. You remember that?
Remember the name, sure.
Those politicians who were really part of the organization, and would say to them, why don't you understand what we can do and what we ought to do and what we're responsible for doing, and behave yourselves? Edward Doleac and Ed Burke and people who have been in it as long as they have are always on the edge of doing something that we would consider naughty.
Absolutely.
And they probably know is naughty. But because they know that we're not going to get too much into it, they're kind of careless, you know?
And therein lies the biggest problem, because if you give people power without controls and checks and balances for that power, why would they be concerned about doing anything other than accruing more power and doing exactly what they want?
Very good question.
So,
and I don't have an answer.
No, that's a problem. Neither one of us do.
Right.
But care is really the number one thing. If people listening to us, if people that still read newspapers, if people who watch TV news get upset about this and don't wait for it to come to your front door, it's a good thing, because that, to me, is what's going on in Springfield. In Springfield, you got a governor, whether you're Republican or Democrat, you got a governor who came in with a change agenda. If that governor quits on this change agenda now, nothing changes. And if nothing changes at all, because there's no way you can tell me the system's not broken on some level, if Mike Madigan, who's been there for 40 years, and nothing changes, the state will continue to spin. And I always say this all the time. I love this city like you love this city. I love this state. Do you want to be Detroit? Because Detroit's coming back. But do you want to be Detroit of 10 years ago and before? That was broken politics and politicians running amok. When are we going to realize that Springfield's a huge problem?
You know, Steve, here's where I get into a little personal problem, because I have opinions. I don't think there is such a thing as pure objectivity. And I'm nervous sometimes about allowing my opinion to get into my reporting.
Mm-hmm.
I, for example, think that Bruce Rauner is, I'm just going to be honest about it and understand that I have to put my personal opinions aside when I'm making a judgment. I think Bruce Rauner is doing a horrendously bad, nothing job as governor.
Chicago Tribune just gave him an F.
Oh, well, he certainly deserves an F. Good, on my mind. But you know what's important? Did the Tribune do it in reportage, or did the Tribune do
right.
it on the opinion page?
Right.
Probably on the opinion page, right?
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's okay, because it is labeled as opinion. When that kind of a judgment, my judgment, gets into a regular newscast or a reporter in the newspaper gets it on the front page,
right.
It shouldn't have that. But let's get beyond that. You know, Rauner is, as you say, a rookie, or as I say, a rookie, inexperienced. He hasn't the faintest idea how to deal with the power of Mike Madigan, and he's just arrogant, you know, and he thinks that because he's maybe not even aware of this, that he thinks because he's a CEO and a major player in the financial world that he can rule the government the way he ruled his business. It just can't be done.
Well, I told him that when he was running. I said, listen, you're a guy that doesn't get told no.
Right.
When you get to the governor's mansion, you're going to be told no every single day. What are you going to do then?
Right. And what did he say?
He goes, no, I get told no all the time, and I'll handle it at the time. His intractability is certainly part of the problem. But is there a way to handle a guy like Madigan, to get Madigan to do the right thing? Or is Madigan at this point, you know, captain of the ship and goes, I don't care what you think?
Yeah, the latter.
Yeah.
You can't get Madigan to do it. The thing is to know how to try to get Madigan what the governor, for instance, thinks is the right thing to do. But he can't push Madigan into doing something. The more he pushes him, and the more the media picks on Madigan, and we sure do, the stronger he gets. It just, it's water off a duck's back, isn't it? And, you know, Madigan's not an evil guy. I happen to think that on this
issue. Yeah, see, I don't know him. I don't know him like you know him, but I certainly think his inability or his choice to not move the ball is evil, because a lot of people are getting hurt.
Well, that's true. But how about what the reason he's not moving ahead? How about the reason Madigan is not moving the ball is because he feels people are being hurt, and they definitely are by the decisions that Bruce Rauner's been making.
Well, but this brings up an interesting point, too, for me. And you can address this from a point of actually picking up the phone and calling these people. It's harder than ever to get certain people to do interviews. Now, Madigan's never been a guy that's done a lot of interviews.
Right.
So when you wanted Madigan on the air, or you wanted to sit down with him, was there a way to do it?
No. I mean, call him, ask him, ask Steve Brown, his PR guy, to help him, and you get the same answer all the time. You know, he just doesn't want to talk to you about this. He's got his work to do. He's got important things on his mind. He doesn't want to bother with a reporter, and it served him very well.
Well, it served him very well, but isn't it also the cheap way out?
Oh, of course. It's bad for everybody. We should force him somehow. How? I don't think he can.
Well, we know that Mayor Daley got to a point where he, and of course he learned this from his dad, But Mayor Daley got to a point where he was, mostly frustrated with the Chicago Tribune. He'd stand up at a press conference and he couldn't wait to rail on the Chicago Tribune. His dad didn't like the media. Was his dad respectful of the process?
I think much more so than the son, because one reason is that the dad had a primary interest in politics and the power of politics in controlling government.
Sure.
Richard Michael Daley doesn't care about politics, never really did care about politics. He followed in his dad's footsteps, but he didn't want to become chairman of the Democratic Party. He didn't spend much time concentrating on the Democratic Party. And he felt inured to the kinds of things reporters were saying because he developed more of a friendly relationship with us. I mean, you could always talk to Rich Daley.
Mm-hmm.
I was afraid to try to talk to
Richie.
No, I was afraid to talk to Richard J.
Yeah.
Because he was just overwhelming. But in a way, that's good, because if you develop working friendships with these people, then you hesitate to pick on them. Not only because you kind of wind up liking them. I like Richard M. Daley, but because you can't work both sides of the fence at the same time.
No, it's absolutely true. But that's something that I think that young reporters may not know or realize.
Among many things.
Right, right.
Let's lay that at the feet of management as well. Right now they're so interested, at least in television, in my opinion, so interested in saving money, which is necessary, and finding beautiful young people, blonde, blue-eyed boys and girls who wouldn't know Madison Avenue from Madison Street.
That's exactly right.
And they put them on the air making pontificating remarks about what's going on in City Hall. And nobody seems to care.
Well, but that's my concern. Are we screaming at the trees at this point, guys like you and me? And if what we're saying doesn't matter in the big picture, then what's the future going to look like for journalism and the ability to protect people by doing our jobs?
Well, that's a good question. It's also very difficult to answer. The other side of that is maybe you and I and people of our reportorial generation are envious of these young kids who are coming in and getting all the huge jobs, or think that we are more knowledgeable and more experienced. It's hard, it's hard to pick on them when we would seem to some people to have a motivation that is less than pure. I pick on them a lot because I've spent so much time fighting with management. I've worked for all the stations on one level or another, fighting with management about showing some respect and showing some interest in what people of age and experience have.
Right.
Gray hair, in your case.
No hair.
Gray hair should be a plus. Steve,
it's absolutely
not
true.
A minus.
It's absolutely true.
And sometimes you just can't convince management of that.
Yeah, and that's it's very frightening to have less money to hire the best people to do this important job at this time because politicians are running amok with it. Now, so you and I share a viewpoint here that I think is important too, and that is that we understand, because we understand the business, you don't have endless amounts of money to throw around to do the right thing. But you can try a little harder to do the right thing and to put more effort into it. And I don't think that's going on. And that allows people like Donald Trump and Ted Cruz, and it's mostly the Republican Party, but the Democrats aren't completely fault-free on this, of making the media the enemy. Have you ever?
Oh, my God.
I don't remember a time where the media has been the go-to punching bag.
And you know what? Part of the reason for that is that the media isn't sophisticated enough anymore to realize what's going on and lets itself get used by these guys. I'm a cable television freak. I mean, every night I spend a couple of hours watching that television because once I start, it's hard to turn off. Trump is great entertainment. He's been using us. They're using us. They know exactly what's going to make, especially Trump, exactly what's going to make news, exactly what's going to get them on the air. And they foment the problems.
But where did that start? Did that start with the Fox News, the liberal media is the problem, that whole sermon that Fox did for years? Is that where that all began?
It's hard to say. It certainly began with Fox, but in my judgment, the more liberal, I would say left-wing public media or left-wing cable media is just as bad as the right-wing.
Sure.
I mean,
the problems are the extremes.
Oh, my God. Rachel Maddow and Lawrence O'Brien, Lawrence O'Donnell, they're really, really, really smart people.
Absolutely.
But they're way off the deep end. Nothing bothers me more than trying to keep up on the political news and hearing one of the people on MSNBC telling me what they think rather than what is going on.
Yeah, what,
and they just don't stop. And you know why? It makes money.
Yeah, it does. That's exactly right. And for that reason, it's hard to put that genie back in the bottle.
Right.
But I couldn't agree with you more. Bill Maher and Rush Limbaugh are the same people.
Absolutely.
They're just on the opposite sides
Absolutely.
Of the street.
Absolutely.
And both of them are dangerous.
And the management encourages them to continue to be increasingly dangerous. I have this theory that management is on the telephone from a booth telling these young anchors on the air to spice it up. Get them to fight. Don't stop.
I can tell you from a talk show host perspective, I've gotten phone calls from all the networks, and I've filled in on CNN a bunch and done the cable news thing. But I've gotten calls, and I turn these down, obviously, all the time. I'll get a call, say, from Bill O'Reilly's people. Bill O'Reilly's people will say, can you come over to Fox? We want you to do this thing. And I'll go, well, what's the topic? And they'll give you the topic of the day. And then without even stopping the pause, they go, and we want you to be on this side. It's not wrestling. I'm not coming. It's not what you want to do. And if O'Reilly, who is the number one guy in primetime cable, and I'm telling you, I'm here to tell you, they do this. They're setting up fights on the air, exactly what you're talking about. What are you supposed to believe?
Well, I don't know. Sometimes I just say, forget the news business and go to movies. But it's just too interesting.
But you know what? You meet kids all the time, and I do as well. Kids who really... really want this.
Right.
They want to be out there chasing these people and telling good stories and reporting on good stories. And, you know, they'll ask for advice. And I've never been at more of a loss to tell them what path to take.
Same with me, except that I will say to these kids all the time, I do, that if you want to get to the top, if you want to become name any one of them.
Well, who is the new the who would they relate to now? The new legitimate journalist. I don't know. I suppose Anderson Cooper.
I was just going to say, I'm thinking Anderson Cooper.
Yeah, yeah.
If you want to become Anderson Cooper, if you want to become Steve Cochran or Bill Curtis or Walter Jacobson or Ron Majors, you can't walk into a station in a market like Chicago. Go to Des Moines. Go to Tuskegee. Go to
learn how to do it.
Yeah, and make yourself useful there so that you can get noticed here, because these news directors have stacks of tapes that have been created beautifully by these young kids.
Sure.
And looking for a job, and the news directors just toss them in the wastebasket.
Sure, of course, because they can.
So is that having a horrible, all of that having a horrible impact on what's going on in our national politics? Good grief. What are we going to do?
Well, but if you go backwards again for a bit, and again, the guest is Walter Jacobson, if you go backwards and you talk about the old days for a second, because I like to, and I know you do as well.
Oh, yeah.
But if you go back and you look at things, what was your BS detector like in the old days? In other words, if a politician looked you in the eyes and he knew who Walter Jacobson was, could you tell they were lying to you if they were lying to you?
Yes, I thought I could tell. I still think I can tell, but I better be careful about saying that that's what they're doing until I know it.
No, but the key there, and I think kids need to hear this, when you know somebody's lying to you, you don't scream, they're lying to me.
Right.
That kicks in the next level of reporting, right?
Yeah.
Because then
that's
you
right.
go, now I got something else to chase.
That's right. And they should be, the people you're talking about, the politicians, should be a little more sophisticated about it and be careful of what they're doing, because they're sicking us on unknowingly, right?
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. And to me, there's a lack of honor now in all levels that used to exist. And if you take it back to the Congress piece of this, you know, one of the refrains that's gone on again and again is there's gridlock in Washington because it's not like when Reagan and Tip O'Neill would go to Camp David and they'd talk. And I'm trying to think of the guy's name. I'm spacing. The senator from Wyoming, Allen. It'll come to me. But a lot of the guys, the 65, really the 70 to 80 year old guys, who for politics are in the prime of their useful careers in Washington because they've seen it all and they know it all. They left because they couldn't get anything done anymore. And that sense of honor walked out the door with them, where I said to you and you said to me, look, I don't agree with you. You don't agree with me. But people elected us to get something done here, and we've got to get that done. Now all you see, and I can't blame it all on the Tea Party, but they certainly started the fire to a large degree. You'll see people go, I'm just here to be right. I'm not here to do the right thing.
That's right.
So that's a bad message for kids to watch, and that should encourage more journalists to come into the plan to try to fix it and chase it.
I don't think there's a shortage of journalists, young journalists, who would like to get into the plan and fix it, but it's very, very difficult to do that now.
Less jobs, more problems. So, all right, so if we can't fix the future, let's talk about the present for a second. What about city politics? Is Rahm Emanuel good or not so good at dealing with the media?
Oh, I thought you were going to stop after saying, is Rahm Emanuel good or not so good? because then I would say he's better than the media thinks he is. If you're going to say with the media, disastrous. He has made himself such a mess by having had that experience as chief of staff and raising money for the big politicians that he doesn't think, or until the McLaughlin case, he doesn't think that anybody could hurt him. And he tosses the media out the window. He doesn't want to answer questions. He leaves. He wants to say something that we don't want to hear, or not say something that we do want to hear.
Yeah.
He does whatever he wants.
Right.
And I don't know what the media can do about that. He's learned a lesson, I think, though, Steve. He's calmed down. His DNA is to be a bully. But he's calmed down to be polite and nice and thoughtful. And, you know, he's a smart guy, and he's done good things, I think, for this town.
Well, you can speak to this much better than I can, because I tend to agree with you. And my piece of this is the aldermen of the city of Chicago, the aldermen and the alderwomen, need a mayor to control them. The mayor has to be someone who is not afraid of them, who is not going to make deals with them that are in their best interest, and is going to control them. And I think you better be careful what you ask for. If you ask Rahm Emanuel to go away, you better be careful, because I believe you need a strong man in any big city.
Well, certainly Richard J. Daley, and maybe to a little less degree, his son Richard M., had that philosophy. You got to be tough with centralized government with control from the top, because there's just too much to get done to have the power spread out so much. But you know, the Black Caucus now has gained some strength in Rahm Emanuel's weaknesses, and he's got to cooperate with them more. I agree with you. They need somebody strong. The city needs somebody strong.
Right.
But Rahm should be more careful about running over people, I think.
Do you see anybody in the pipeline who is a clear choice to jump in and be the next mayor? Look, what do you think of Tom Dart?
Well, Tom Dart would be a great candidate for mayor, but, you know, he's got five kids, and he's worked himself to death at the county jail. I think that the next mayor is more likely to be Toni Preckwinkle for a lot of reasons, and I don't doubt for a minute that she's aiming at it.
Is that right?
She is just as much a politician as the Daleys and the Durbins and everybody else. I mean, she's cut herself a path, you know, with her former chief of staff, Kim Fox, who Toni Preckwinkle moved into the position of state's attorney, and she's got her eye on that office. I think she was ready to do it last time, but kind of chickened out.
And I brought this up, but let me jump backwards too again to Springfield. If you've got two rams on the top of a mountain smashing into each other over and over again, and those rams in this scenario are Rauner and Madigan, when do we get a state budget?
You know, they're both kind of admitting that we may never, blaming each other for that, of course, but we just may not. How can that be? How can they possibly have the gall to continue in this ridiculous secondary of importance fight the way they are? You've got to have a budget.
It's insane. It should be the basic job requirement. You have to have a budget to do your job.
What would happen if the Tribune ran a front page editorial saying, impeach them both?
Right. Right. Kick them both out.
People probably wouldn't even notice it.
Well, you know what? But then the rest of us pick it up and we run with it. Maybe we start our own fire. Right. My concern with the with this problem as it continues is if we don't have it, we will spin. And there is damage that goes on every day. We know we can quantify this. $13 million a day being wasted by the state.
Yeah, I don't know how.
Every day of the week.
How can they do it? And, you know, each of them, Madigan and Rauner, say that the other is the one who's holding things up. I happen to think that Rauner's holding them up more than Mike Madigan. Madigan's more responsible for getting us here. Rauner's more responsible right now for keeping us here.
And I would be fine if they both stepped aside.
Then we'd lose great motivation to do what we do.
You know what? We'd find more. Before we finish, though, I didn't really talk to you much about, because the presidential race is beyond, you know, we beat that into the ground every day. But in Congress, at a time where you've got Republican leadership and Democrat leadership who occasionally smile at each other, but they only occasionally work together, do you think in a new administration, whether it's Hillary Clinton, and I believe it will be, or whether it's a Republican, do you think we'll get a break in this gridlock, or are we going to have more of the problem?
I think there is so much pressure and will be continuing pressure on these major politicians to be more constructive and talk to each other that it will happen.
And that's the beauty of the coverage. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, that's right.
That's the power of the blogs, and that's the power of everybody having their own talk show. Right. The more people are involved, we've never lived in a time where more people have been connected to this election. They may not be appropriately connected, in my view, but they are connected. I promised somebody that when I told them we'd be talking that I'd ask you what your favorite cocktail story is. Your favorite party story, when somebody says, Walter, of all the years you've done this, what's the one story that jumps out? Because you've got a card file of anecdotes that you could write a book about in the next 10 minutes. But what's your favorite?
That's a hard question because it depends on what makes a favorite. My interview speaking of losing a name, who's the big killer? Gacy, John Wayne Gacy.
Oh, sure, John Wayne Gacy. Yeah.
My access to Gacy in the prison and interviewing him was the best story I ever had in terms of getting ratings. It wasn't the story that I really liked the most because I'd rather go to the conventions, but that really made a mark in my career, as did my dressing up. And these are kind of silly stories away. This one, dressing up as a homeless person.
Oh, that wasn't silly at all. I think shedding a light on that.
Thank you for saying that.
That was not silly in the least. Yeah. And shedding a light on that problem. We should not have homelessness in America. We do. It's bad every day.
Oh, God. I can't tell you how nice it is to hear that because I still get railed on.
I'm telling you right now, for what you did and the honesty of it, was to be in the middle of it and express how miserable you were and how you couldn't even imagine what these folks must be going through. That was key. I thought it was great work.
Oh, God. I'm so happy to hear that.
Yes. It's nice to do this, and I hope we can do it
really?
Again.
I'd love to.
And I appreciate it because to get some perspective, well, there's a word you're fairly familiar with, to get some perspective from Walter Jacobson on the coverage of this, we're not giving up. And we don't want you guys listening to give up. You have to care enough to stay involved. Support those programs, those blogs and those podcasts, and support those journalists that are doing the job for you. But this is the most important thing, and I'll leave you with this. Don't just take it from me. Don't just take it from you. When you hear a story that interests you, dig deeper. Don't stop at the headline. Read the story. Look for other sources. Find out. Educate yourself on stuff that matters in your world.
Amen. Amen. And it's wonderful talking to you. I've respected and watched or heard you for so long.
Wow, that's nice.
I think we ought to do this often. Just make a time for it.
Good therapy for both of us. Yeah. Walter Jacobson, thank you, sir, and we'll be back.
Okay, Steve. Thank you.
Thanks.